As human beings, we learn about the world around us from the people around us. There was a study several years ago from Yale University, and it had adults and children. And the children were given a place where they could watch the adults, and the adults in the study were told to take the ball out of the box, and they were each handed a box. And so the adults took the box, one after the other, would take the box, and they'd set it on the table, and then they'd get a feather, and they'd tap the feather on the box, and then they'd put the feather back, and then they'd open up the box and take the ball out. So then the children were brought in after watching this, and the children were asked to take the ball out of the box. And almost every time, the child would take the box and set it on the table and get the feather and tap it on the box, put the feather back, open up the box, and take out the ball. Even though when they were interviewed, the children knew that the feather really didn't have anything to do with getting the ball out of the box, still they'd tap away. We learn about the world from the world around us. We learn not only how to do things, but we learn perspective, we learn values, we learn vision, we learn our identity. Everything that is central to us, except perhaps a little voice within us that is sometimes hard to hear unless you're really listening, everything comes to us because of the world around us. And if that world is terribly wrong, then the truth we carry might also be terribly wrong. Paul, I think, was concerned about that and why this letter to the Colossians was written. Colossae was a city inside the Roman Empire. It was kind of cosmopolitan. There were lots of different folks from different parts of the empire there who brought with them their own cultural traditions and also brought with them their own religions. There would have been a variety of different religious expressions in the town. And Paul was concerned that this new thing, this Christianity, would easily get lost in the melding of that faith with other faiths out there, which was kind of the way the Romans operated. They would often see nothing wrong with taking a little bit from religion A and a little bit from religion B and a little bit from religion C and putting it together and making their own thing. Paul, I think, was concerned about the ways of other faith traditions, the ways of the world co-opting Christianity. So he wrote this letter to these folks, and as you heard, Paul gives some instructions about how to be a community and centers that community, unsurprisingly, in the idea of love. We talk about that a lot here. Love sits at the very heart of the Christian tradition. Love is how we understand what is eternal. Love is how we understand what is our role in life. When asked what the most important thing a faithful person should do, Jesus said in the Gospels, you should love God with your whole being and love your neighbor as yourself. Later in the epistles, God is referred to as love, a particular kind of love, agape love, self-giving love. God is love. So love sits at the very heart, and love is not just a warm feeling that we get. Love is a power to transform. Love is a principle upon which nations and economies can be built. Love is a central guiding light for human existence. The problem is that the world around the people then and the world around us now was not built on love. The world then and now was built on violence, was built on fear, was built on the need for order and control. The word then and the word now is a word of conflict with the path of love and the way the world is organized. That's a challenge. Yesterday, I was coming from one place to another, and Kate was watching a documentary and said it was interesting, so I sat down and watched it on PBS. I don't know if any of you saw it, but it was interesting. It was about a conservative evangelical Christian who worked against abortion, was anti-abortion, and thought of himself and that work as being pro-life, and really took that phrase seriously and began to think of that phrase, pro-life, in terms of guns. And he could find nothing pro-life about a gun. And so then started thinking that perhaps guns were in contradiction to the Christian faith. And he began to talk to the people that he had been working with for decades in the anti-abortion movement about this idea about guns not being pro-life. And what he ran into, and the documentary showed these meetings time and time again with these Christian leaders, these pastors and leaders of organizations, what he ran into time and time again is that he was not able to convince many people that guns were somehow against the notion of being pro-life. The people that defended the need for guns talked about innocent life, that violence was necessary to protect innocent life. And I find that really strange because I grew up in an evangelical conservative Christian community. Now, this was before the whole seduction of that world into the Republican Party, but in the church that I remember, there was a big emphasis on redemption. Everybody was a sinner, and everybody could be redeemed by the love of Christ. And in fact, in conservative Christian circles, there was nothing that was loved more than somebody to stand up and give their testimony about how great and terrible a sinner they were until they ran into Jesus and changed their lives. So finding this distinction of innocent life, the innocent ones who needed to be violently protected from the apparently guilty ones, seemed to me a contradiction not only against Christianity as a whole, but against that particular part of Christianity that was evangelical Christianity, conservative evangelical Christianity. It was interesting. It was interesting the arguments they used, because those are the same arguments that are provided over and over again by the NRA, the National Rifle Association. And it seemed as if, when I was listening to them, that they had taken the gospel of Jesus Christ and taken the gospel of the National Rifle Association and found a way to merge them. Sort of like what Paul was concerned about happening in Colossae. But it seems odd how that can happen. Because if you base an idea of the world as loving your neighbor as yourself, a gun is a tool built specifically to deny the principle of loving your neighbor as yourself. Because a gun points one way, and whoever that gun is pointing at is being told that they're not loved as much as the person on the other side of the gun. That their life has less value than the person on the other side of the gun. That their life value is problematic. And all of that stands against the central principles of Christ. Now, I found that example interesting because of my own background, but it's also easy for us to talk about because we're not conservative evangelical Christians, and it's always easier to see the log in somebody else's eye than to see the speck in our own. But the truth is, all of us, have managed to accommodate ourselves to a social order that's built on violent exploitation of the earth, of workers, of the future of this planet. All of us have found ways to get by in this world that's built on exploitation, and all of us have, to some extent, succeeded in that world. And that world's principles are in contradiction to the values of love. Love is hard. Living in a reality that is utterly opposed to some of the fundamental values of the world around us is terribly difficult. And that's why Paul talks about community. There was a study a while back that talked about diets, and basically the point was that almost every diet can be considered sort of a fad. People would get on them, sometimes lose a lot of weight, but then gain the weight back. The one exception that was a little bit better than the others was the Weight Watchers program, and the reason that was different was not because of the particular way they had people count calories, but because the fact that they brought people into a community of people who were struggling with the same issue. It's the whole point of a 12-step program. Quitting an addiction is very difficult, and you need each other to support that. That's why Paul puts on that emphasis of coming together, teaching one another, admonishing, which I think means helping people figure out the right way of living and living that way. Paul also talks about singing, which we do, and psalms and scripture. These things are not simply things we gather to do to somehow make us feel better. It's not something that is supposed to just stimulate our minds and gives us something to think about. It's not some crutch to help us get through as a soul-crushing week. It's not some promise of an afterlife that'll help us get through life itself. It is about coming together and asserting an alternative reality and helping one another live in that reality. Because it's hard work. That reality, that dream of a world built on love, is a challenge to almost everything around us. This time of year, when we're singing Christmas carols, love seems closer. Every year we take it out of the box and we put it in the middle of our lives and we decorate it all up and we talk about love, and there's all sorts of places that are doing good work that are highlighted, and news stories are about people who are sharing.